Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty good.
We're going to start today with an article written by a former guest of this show. A woman named Natalie McLean is a Canadian wine writer, and she has a website called Nat Decant. It's a great website, and she has a newsletter that she comes out like once a month, once every couple of weeks, and I get it. It's emailed to me, and
yep,
she
sends it right over.
I often really enjoy it, and she writes about, she's a Canadian wine writer, but she writes about wine from around the world, but she also writes about Canadian wine occasionally, and that is an area that most people don't know about the United States, and that is a fast-rising place to get quality wine. It's really, you know, quality wine grows, really great wine comes from the extremities of where wine is produced. I mean, in the coolest places where you often get some of the best wine, where it's a little difficult to grow wine, you often get the best wine. Canada's got some great stuff. But she wrote this most recent article, well, most recent for me, on, she calls it The Grapes of Gaff. She says, these are the times when you wish you could crawl into a bottle and pull the cork in behind you. You know, what do you do when you're in unusual social situations?
These wine gaffes occur.
So she presents a number of situations and solutions, and I don't want to talk about them. Ready? Here's situation number one. After standing in line to buy a limited edition wine in Napa Valley, dragging it back to your suitcase and carefully storing it in your cellar for several years, you take the coveted bottle to dinner at your friend's home, and you want to have it with dinner with them and share it with them and share your travels, and you watch as they blithely take the bottle and put it on the shelf while offering you the cheap schlock that's already open. What do you do?
We all have friends like this. Because I come over, I usually have, you know, a $50 or $100 bottle of wine, and...
And here's a Chianti.
And frequently it just goes, it goes up on, oh, how nice, thank you.
Yeah. And they put it in the sunlight, you know, or something. Anyway, here's the solution, and I think it's a good one. My solution is I carry a corkscrew in my back pocket. I walk over to the cabinet. I take it down. I say, oh, try it. If you want to drink your wine, make it obvious by, and these are great solutions, calling ahead to ask the host which wine you can contribute to complement what's being served for dinner.
That's a great solution.
Isn't that great? Here's another one. When you arrive, stay alert, agile, and ready for the next move. On the doorstep with corkscrew in hand, if necessary, use assumptive close sales technique. Here's the California Cabernet for dinner. Where would you like me to open it and let it breathe? That short of decanting wine in the car should adequately make the point. I agree entirely.
As you start crossing over the threshold of the house, you should begin cutting the lead off of the top of the
bottle. Look at what I got. Or I always do like a Dean Martin, used to carry around a glass of whiskey, which I'm tempted to do when hosting in Catherine Lombardi restaurant. Little rocks. How's everything this evening? You know, show up with the open bottle of wine and a glass poured for yourself as you approach. Okay, next situation. And we've been in this situation, and this is something a lot of people don't realize.
I've been in that last situation a lot. It's happened to me a million times. Usually I bring a bottle of wine that's nicer than what most people serve at those types of parties. But let's open it. Come on,
hey,
it's for us.
This is great, and it's drinking perfectly right now. Like now.
An hour from now.
Tomorrow
it's
going to be declining. Yeah. All right. Here's another situation. With eyes closed, you breathe in deeply, searching for exotic aromas in your glass of Burgundian Pinot Noir. Instead, an acrid smell jabs its way up your nostrils, singeing your nose hair. This isn't the aroma of wet violets underneath the delicate layer of French oak you were expecting. It's more like Chanel No. 5. In fact, it is Chanel No. 5. The woman sitting next to you must have bathed in it this evening before coming. Scents? People who wear strong scents to wine events? We ask people not to wear a scent to wine events because 90% of wine is smell.
Our employees are actually not allowed to wear anything scented while they're working for us.
Including hand lotions.
Mm-hmm.
How many surprised new employees have been reprimanded for the hand lotion? Because they bring you your glass of wine, you're like, smells like coconuts. Why does the wine smell like coconuts?
There are people on our staff whose lip gloss is too smelly. We're like, sorry, you got to lose the lip gloss.
Yeah, we're pretty picky to work for, huh? Don't let your children work for us. They'll be scarred for life. The solution, short of diluting the woman's essence with your table water or a fire hose, there aren't many options. And you could leave, but you could move, but there's really nothing to do. So be careful when you wear a scent, because what happens when you put a scent on, 20 minutes later, you don't smell it anymore,
mm-hmm.
but we do. So we all have to be careful about that. Okay, next situation. The crusty sommelier has just poured you the rare bottle of Brunello di Montalcino to sample. As you swirl it in your mouth, you realize it's gone bad, probably corked. What do you say?
This is an easy one.
Excuse me.
This is an easy one. I don't need Natalie for this one.
She has a good one. What she says is this is great. Rather than say this wine is corked, if you're not sure, and most people who aren't professionals sometimes aren't sure,
mm-hmm.
you can say, "I think this bottle is off." Or you know, would you try this bottle? Or if it's the captain that's opening the bottle of wine, can you say, you know, can you have the sommelier try this bottle? I don't think it's quite right. And for most places, that will usually suffice. Sometimes the wine is just not what you're expecting. If the wine is different than you may be expecting, doesn't mean you should send it back.
There are a lot of funky wines out there. We have a wine on our list, Bernard Leve Cote Roti.
Smells like a wet cow.
Which is not what a lot of people expect when they open a bottle of wine. It smells like wet leather. It smells like what the French call animal. That wine can take somebody by surprise.
I call it a wet cow. I'm not French. I guess they're the same, though, huh?
But it's supposed to be to smell like wet leather. That's what that wine is at its best.
And if you send it back, you're going to miss out on a whole bunch of cool stuff. But it's unexpected, and I can see why one would. But that's why when someone presents you with a bottle of wine, say, you know, I think this is a little off. Why don't you try it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is what happens when you're with a staff that says, oh, it's fine, because I've been in that situation where I said, hey, why don't you try this? And I know, because I'm a professional, this is what I do for a living.
You know what? And in that case, let's talk about what we do in that situation. If we think a bottle of wine is fine. In that situation, with most bottles of wine, what we would say is, okay, and we would take it to the bar and sell it by the glass and
as restaurateurs.
As restaurateurs and do something with
it. No, I'm sorry. Yes, if the bottle of wine is indeed fine and the person wants to send it back, we will normally take it back.
So what you should do if the maitre d' says this is fine and you really don't think it's fine, and again, we're not talking about wines that you don't that are different than you expected them to be. We're talking about wines that you think are actually bad. You should refuse the wine, I think.
I agree. Okay, final situation. You've just poured a fine example of a vintage German Riesling when your friend asks for some ginger ale to make a spritzer.
I like her solution here.
Her solution
this is very nice.
Her solution is don't pass judgment. Not everyone savors the nuances of fine wine. Some people simply prefer something refreshing. Let's not be silly. Let's get up and get the ginger ale. There's no offer to get the ginger ale from the kitchen while whisking away the glass from your guest. No need to explain why you must take the wine in order to get the ginger ale. But when you get into the kitchen, you can pour that wine into your glass and open up the cheap Chablis that you have in the refrigerator for your mother-in-law waiting to come over.
No, the cheap Chablis that somebody brought over to your house when they came over, and instead of opening, you said, I can't serve this to my guests.
Well, and you saved it for just such an example. Put the ginger ale in it. Everybody's happy. We have coming up with us in the next segment, we have a wine.
My dry cleaner likes to give me bottles of wine like that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I hope she's not listening. We have coming up a winemaker from California. Partners with George Henry is Susan Ridley. We're going to be talking with her about California wine and an upcoming wine dinner you can go to in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we have joining us today Susan Ridley. Susan and her husband Tom live in the Brookside Ranch in Napa, California, right next to, and she's also partners with, one of the most intelligent and knowledgeable winemakers and grape growers in all of California, a gentleman named George Henry at the Henry Winery. George will be joining us next week at Stage Left Restaurant on Wednesday, and he's going to bring a number of his wines with him, and we will pair many of those wines with our cuisine in order to blow the minds of our guests in attendance, and we also try to blow George away every time he comes. And if you'd like to come, you can go to stageleft.com, or you can call 732-828-4444. If you call the station right now, you can get we'll get you the information on how to come to that. Now, Susan, how are you?
Fine. How are you?
Morning, Susan.
Good morning. It's nice to talk to both of you.
Yeah, long time no speak.
I know, just on the emails. That's all we ever talk anymore.
Now, that's the way of the world. That's the way it's gone, Susan.
Now, you lived in Jersey for a while. It's 29 degrees out here. Do you miss it?
Not at all.
So, let's tell everybody. I mean, we know your story, but you didn't move to California to get into the wine business, right? You were just minding your own business, and the nice man next door turned out to be George Hendry, one of the best winemakers in California, and now you're partners and flying all over the world to explain George's wine. How did that happen?
Well, you know, George is a bachelor and loves
you,
to have...
You guys have something going on there?
No. But he loves good food and good wine.
Uh-huh.
That's why he always loves to do those dinners with you.
Right.
Yeah, and by the way, and Susan's a really good cook. So,
yeah, and he lives over there all by himself, and I love to cook. So he would have many, many, many dinners with my husband and I. And we would try different wines with different things and with different foods, and we just always enjoyed that. And when George decided that he wanted to... sell a little less of his fruit to other wineries and keep some for his own label and start up a Hendry label, that's something you just don't do by yourself.
Right.
It's too much work.
I understand. I have a partner in the restaurant for the same reason.
He doesn't even like me.
Otherwise, there's no chance Francis would still be around.
So George and I became business partners in the winery, and I concentrate mostly on sales and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
But when we were first starting out, you know, our first release was only 500 cases. Can you believe that?
Yes,
I remember.
And when it was only 500 cases, I did a lot more. My position description was more varied.
And what year was that? What was the first release?
The first release was in 1995.
Yeah, we bought 100 of those 500 cases, I think. No, I'm kidding. I'm exaggerating, but only slightly.
And now we're, last year we sold 12,000 cases.
Wow, that's great. But that's still a small winery. It's still
very
hands-on.
Small, and we're limited to about that size because we will only make wine from George's vineyard, and we do not purchase any grapes. And the vineyard is, we're pretty much maxing out the quality
property.
Fruit that the vineyard produces.
Let's talk about some of the selling of wine that you guys have done. You guys used to sell a lot of your grapes to various different people. Opus One was on the list. The Mondavi Reserve had some grapes that you guys sold to them.
Correct.
Why were they so interested in the grapes from George's land?
Well, George has such a unique vineyard. You know, we have elevation. We're not a valley floor vineyard. We're in the foothills of the Mayacamas Mountains. And we're low enough that we still have that wonderful maritime climate of Canaros.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very unusual combination for the valley. There's not many places in the valley that has that combination.
Let me explain what that's all about. What Susan's talking about is, you know, the great wine, especially when you're talking about small producer wine like this, where it's from a specific place, what people are looking for in California, which never has a problem with enough sunshine to get grapes ripe, they're looking for, in Napa especially, cool places. That's why when you look on the back of a wine label, they'll say, oh, it's, you know, several thousand feet up on the Rutherford Bench, or it's you know, has the cool maritime influences from the ocean, and Carneros is an inner appellation of Napa and Sonoma that's cooler. And George's property is that you're in the coolest inner appellation of Napa Valley overall, right? And that leads to a better quality grape?
Yeah, and I it does. It's very unique. We can, the fruit can get very nice and ripe without getting that dead ripe, pruny, overripe characteristic.
Right, and Francis and I describe that sometimes as like a dried fruit flavor when the fruit gets too ripe.
And what can happen, just so you understand what happens out there, is a place that is a beautiful place to grow a grapevine, where a grapevine has a really easy time of it. Lots of sunshine. What the grapevine does is it throws all of its life energy into making a beautiful plant. When you're in a cooler place where the grapevine has to work a little harder and maybe feels a little bit threatened, and it's trained properly, it doesn't throw all of its life energy into making a beautiful plant. It throws it into the next generation, into reproduction. And then it throws all of its energy into the grapes. And that's why cooler climate leads to, and stress vines lead to better wines. Is that a fair analysis of
this? It is. It's a very good analysis. And also, the soils that George have, they're very rocky, thin soils. They're ancient stream beds. you dig down 20 feet, and all you take out is rocks.
We're gonna talk more
about the blocks.
We're gonna talk about that in just a moment, and what makes this so unique, and how George is one of the most intelligent winemakers in California. He's actually a nuclear physicist by trade, so I wasn't kidding when I said he was pretty intelligent. We're talking with his partner Susan Ridley at Henry Wines out in California. We'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Shatta, stage left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And if you want to check out George Henry's wines, we have Susan Ridley from Henry Winery on the line talking with us today about wines in California. We're going to do a dinner with George Henry this coming Wednesday. Check it out on our website.
Tuesday,
I'm sorry. Got it wrong. That was my engineer who just said,
thanks, Jay.
The radio guys saved my butt here. It's on Tuesday, and if you want to check out the menu, you can go to stageleft.com and give it a whirl.
What we're going to do on Wednesday, so everybody knows, and one of the reasons George is in town, is there's a very, very large trade tasting on Wednesday in New York City that George flies into, so he can taste the restaurants and liquor stores on his wines.
Now, we were talking about George. Now, George is a nuclear physicist by training, right, Susan?
Correct.
And his spare time, but he's not like a nuclear physicist who made his fortune and then decided to take up farming. He's actually been on the Henry Ranch his whole life, right?
He has been. His parents bought the ranch in 1939.
Uh-huh. And he's been farming there ever since?
Ever since. Now, his dad died about 5 years after they bought the ranch, so mm-hmm. George was only about 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And there were tough times all those years for he and his brother and mother. And
farming's not an easy life.
No, it isn't. And the ranch was not all grapes then, because back then Napa was not a monoculture. They had cattle, and cattle was a big industry in the valley, and prunes were a big industry in the valley.
But George knows that land since he's 6 years old.
Right. And they would take the grapes that they would grow up to the Christian Brothers Mont LaSalle Winery, right up the road from us, Butch, mm-hmm. which is now the Hess Collection.
Uh-huh.
Right. And at a very young age, he figured out that the most profitable thing that they did on the ranch was grow and sell grapes.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So he's always been smart.
Yeah.
He figured out that when he grew up, he was going to make the whole ranch grapes.
I want my 10-year-old to figure out how to make me the most money.
Hold on a second. We're gonna link you on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, to henrywinery.com. You can go out and visit them, or you can come have dinner with George next Tuesday when he's visiting us. When you combine the intelligence of a nuclear physicist with the hard work of a lifelong farmer, you really do get some really great wines. And we're going to talk more with Susan Ridley, his partner in Henry Wines, in just a moment after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Susan Ridley. She's a partner in Henry Wines with George Henry, who is one of the most knowledgeable, intelligent winemakers and grape growers in California. George is a nuclear physicist by trade, but he's no Johnny come lately to the farming and wine business. He's been growing food on the Henry Ranch since he was six. And so he knows probably more about the viticulture, which is the grape growing of California, than just about anybody. And he's actually going to be at Stage Left Restaurant this coming Tuesday to do a wine dinner. So if you want to meet him and taste some of his wines and talk about them, you can come meet him. But another thing that I really recommend, if there's one place to visit that's sort of off the tourist trail in California, you can go and visit the Henry Ranch. And one of the things that's really impressive about George is bring a big thing of water, bring some really comfortable shoes, because if you don't have 2 hours and you don't want to learn a lot, go to the Mondavi tour and have a biscuit.
Yeah, take your 20 minutes,
right.
Taste a couple wines.
Why don't you talk to us, Susan, about what people can learn by when they come out and walk the vineyards with George? And if you go, you're walking the vineyards with George or his nephew who make the wines. What will they see that they might not see otherwise in the more, commercial tours?
You forgot to mention they should wear a hat.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you something. The first time I was at the Henry Ranch, George, how old is George? Do you mind if I ask?
He's 68.
All right, so George, who is 62, right, and I'm 30, we're out in the vineyard, and he had me out there for 2.5 hours, and it was sunny as hell, and he had this little pith helmet on, and we're standing in the direct sunlight. I swear to God, I almost fell over, and he's indestructible. George is indestructible.
I got
to
tell you, little George in the little pith helmet cracks me up.
Worth going to California.
Okay, right there. Cracks me up.
So George also thinks he's immortal, too.
By the way,
he might be.
He's a lot more immortal than I am, because he was doing fine in the direct sun. I was going to fall over.
That's the farmer. That's what you have. That's a farmer in him.
So
well, his tours are so informative. George is all about his vineyard, about the grapes. And I think the wine that we produce is really a vehicle for people to see his vineyard.
Well, what will they see when they're actually out of the vineyard, staying
at your
ranch?
George will take them out amongst the vines. He'll show them about grafting, how grapes are grafted. He'll show them how they're trained and trellised.
You learn a lot about the science you were on the show once before, and we talked a little bit about this. I remember my dad, who's a chemical engineer and loves the science of just about everything that he does. And he and George were talking about photosynthesizing sunlight into grape energy and how that, and I was going to cry from the boredom there. Because George, I'll tell you, George gets a science geek going. And he gets all revved up and off he goes. By the way, if you guys want to see a picture of George Henry in the pith helmet, you can go to stageleft.com right now where the menu is, and there's a picture
of George. Click on events, click on view menu, and you can see a picture of George in the pith helmet.
Picture of George in the pith helmet.
Do you have your menu up there, too?
Yeah. It is, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that menu looks glorious.
I think it's going
to
be really good.
That brings me to another topic, Susan. Now, you go out and do wine dinners a lot, and George does wine dinners occasionally throughout the country.
You're the only wine dinner he's going to do all year.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a great compliment.
Yeah.
That is a huge compliment.
But you go out and do some, right?
I do lots, yeah.
And we're the only one that George is doing. Hey, that's great.
I know. He's very involved in a big cyclotron project this year, and he's only going to be able to do 3 marketing trips.
Because he's busy building a cyclotron.
So once in a while, you got to build a nuclear cyclotron, you know what?
As opposed to what kind of cyclotron, Mark? The non-nuclear cyclotron? Now, Mark, you just gave me the like. What are you mocking me for, man? All right. Now, why would George pick ours as opposed to other places to go? Because my question is, I've been to many wine dinners that are consumer-driven events, and I've been to ones where they just don't work, where they don't pay enough attention to putting the food and wine together, or they don't have the frame of reference, and things just don't fly. Do you find that often? And when you do, how do you deal with it?
Well, I do find it occasionally, and how I deal with it is I just kind of roll with it.
you're a roll with it kind of lady, though, Susan.
Yeah, and you do the best you can and enjoy it, and it's really meant to be an enjoyable event for everyone involved, and a real dining experience.
Well, you know, one of the things I find about wine dinners that I really like, and everybody does them now. We were among the first to do them in Jersey, but everybody does them. And I think they're great. Even if they miss a little bit, they're great.
And it's fun to see when they miss sometimes.
But,
you know, that's a learning experience.
As long as it's somebody else's restaurant.
As long as it's not our restaurant, exactly.
But you know, when people buy wine in tastings, people buy wine based on scores. Not a great idea. Buy wine from a recommendation from the sommelier or local wine merchant. Better idea, especially if you know them and have a relationship with them. But buying wine in these tastings where you have 12 different wines to taste and you buy what you taste, you often get home and say, you know, I don't like that as well as I thought it did, or that doesn't go as well with dinner. To really get to understand a wine, you need to sit down and have it with food over time. It's not a contest. It's not put the wine in your mouth and spit it out and give it a score.
One of the hardest things that we do in this profession is taste a lot of wines back to back to back to back to back. It is a very, very difficult thing that we do, because what we have to make assumptions about while we're tasting wine, and I think a lot of people do very poorly, what the assumptions you have to make are, what is this going to taste like when somebody's sitting down and having dinner with this food? And how is it going to be different from the 2 sips that I'm having right now in the middle of this, sometimes very cold room tasting wine.
What are your thoughts on that, Susan? I mean, as far as the role of the wine dinner in learning about and buying wine.
Well, I agree with everything you've said, that it is a time for people to be able to see the interaction of flavors between food and wine. And that's a very interesting, complex, and highly enjoyable experience. And I think the more people do it, the more they start thinking about it and start thinking about this, that wine is meant to pair with food to make the dining experience more enjoyable, for the wine to show off the food and the food to show off the wine so that it becomes this very enjoyable marriage.
And when you go to professional wine events, or when you go to think when people put things together, if you find a combination that works, like, oh, Chardonnay works with this, Pinot Noir works with tuna, mm-hmm. how interesting. Mm-hmm. That's what you put in your own memory bank for going forward, to see wine and food put together by professionals. Even when it doesn't work, you can say, oh, that doesn't work, and try and figure out why it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really one of the best and most interesting things you can do.
It's certainly one of the most educational.
And someone like George, who can comment during the dinner, mm-hmm. Because he's a serious student of wine and food flavors.
He's also a very straight shooter. He'll tell you what he thinks really works. He'll tell you what he thinks works less well.
Mm-hmm.
We spent some time actually before the last dinner with George making some last-minute changes based on you know, the wines and the food and some little accents that the chef had added at the last
minute. If you have a restaurant out there, and we know we have a lot of restaurateurs that listen to the show, when you have a restaurant, the day of the wine dinner, if you can't do it in advance, have the chef, or if you are a chef, cook all the food mm-hmm. off that afternoon.
One of each of the foods.
Right, but check your assumptions and try the wine with the food, and you'll find that you often make last-minute adjustments. You might say, oh, my God, there's raw onion on that food, mm-hmm. and that's with Chardonnay. Get the raw onion out of there.
Right.
And these minor adjustments.
A little chive garnish can wreck a food and wine match.
And you don't want to find that out when you have 50 people in your dining room with plates in front of them. You want to find that out in the afternoon. And often it's not a wholesale change you need to make, but you'll find something slightly off, and it's restaurants that do that I think really go the extra mile and can really do something interesting.
Susan, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about visiting you and Brookside Ranch and tell people about the unique experience you have out there.
And how they can get there. Our guest is Susan Ridley. She's partnered with George Hendry in Hendry Wines, and we'll be back talking more with her about California wines in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagut and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, back at the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Susan Ridley. Susan is partners with George Hendry of Hendry Wines in Napa, California. And she's talking with us today about wines from Napa. Now, Susan, you own the Brookside Ranch, which is right next to the Hendry Ranch, and you actually operate a bed and breakfast out of there.
That's right.
There aren't a lot of bed and breakfasts like yours out there, are there?
No. Many years ago, the county of Napa discontinued permitting bed and breakfast in the county, but we already had our permit, so we were grandfathered in.
So how long have you been running a B&B out there?
Oh, my gosh. 18 years?
Wow. Let me tell you, because actually, when Francis or I go to Napa, generally Susan is where we with Susan is where we stay. Susan's bed and breakfast is three bedrooms.
Awesome.
It's the cutest little,
it
most
is my home away
awesome
from home
place
on the West Coast.
She's got, and Susan has her own wine and vineyard, which we haven't really talked about yet. But you're sitting on her vineyard in this magnificent little bed and breakfast. Susan is an awesome cook and always makes sure that breakfast is special. It is my favorite place to stay out there.
And there's a library and a pool.
And a library and a pool.
And the library has a leather chair. So running the B&B, do you still do that? Do you always have guests still, or is it much more limited?
In fact, just before you called, I was sectioning grapefruit and cutting up strawberries.
Well, also, when you go out there, Susan is a magnificent little cruise director. And always make sure that Susan's a little bit of a gossip, and we can let that out there.
Because I want to know.
And Susan's in on every little new nuance of information.
So here's what we do socially when we go out there. When Mark and I are going out to California, we have business appointments to keep. We have people we want to see. We have wine business we want to do. But then we want to go out to dinner, and here's how we go out to dinner. We call up Susan and say, where are we going to dinner in Napa? What's cool? So let's do it for the listeners.
Susan, what's cool right now
in
Napa?
What's cool in Napa for dining?
The new hot place in Napa is a place called Red, R-E-D-D, and it's short for Reddington. That's the name of the chef. Do you remember the old Piatti restaurant in Yachtville?
Yes.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
Well, they took it over, and it is Reddington had been the chef at Auberge,
mm-hmm.
and he and the managing partners of Auberge, I think.
And what's hot about it? What kind of food?
It's pretty much California cuisine, American California. But it's the hot place right now.
Yeah.
That's what everybody's talking
totally
about.
They totally redid the restaurant, remodeled it, so uh-huh. it doesn't look anything like the old Piatti's.
Well, now Susan, if you go out there, I mean, do you cook for guests usually or no?
No, not just very special people like you.
That's awesome. But what's interesting...
Because I'm hardly home anymore.
Well, what's interesting that I found is, you know, you really have your finger on the pulse of the markets out there and the farm markets and what's fresh and what's not. And to me, I understand, because I'm from here, the seasons of what's seasonal in the
East
Coast.
In the Northeast, right.
But it's interesting because I think we have this impression that everything always grows and everything's always available in Napa, but there's seasonal stuff out there as well.
Yes. And we have farmers markets that just deal with the seasonal things.
And so how do the seasons work in California? I mean, it's always warm, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what?
But we have, you know, I'm speaking more of local here in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be, we have cool winters, and we don't have fresh strawberries and nectarines and things like that from this area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we can get them from Southern California. Which
is a lot closer than us getting them from Southern California.
That's right. Yeah.
Well,
I like to do the same thing. You know, we do the same things in the winter. We like to have the wonderful root vegetables,
mm-hmm.
and of course we do have access to things coming up from Southern California. But you still want to have those things that you always think of as seasonal.
Susan's also a great cheese connoisseur, so if she ever offers you a cheese plate, accept.
I want to ask you, Susan, about a very special product that's not available for sale, Hendry Blackberry Jam.
Oh, yeah.
What's the story with that?
That's our most allocated item.
You
have that on the menu.
Just so the public knows, Francis and I each get a jar every year for Christmas, and we have now allocated that jam to go specifically to this dinner. To be used only in this dinner.
I was wondering where that jam was going to come from.
It was my Christmas present from you.
Did you think you were going to get a phone call today saying, and Susan will be FedExing us some jam tonight?
Yeah, I had a big question mark next to it, and I'm going to say, did we need to send some?
So tell us, we're making it into Linzer cookies for the dinner, because I thought that'd be poetic and sweet.
Yeah,
so
lovely.
I get it sweet.
Tell us about this jam. Where does it come from? Why is it so special? It's the best jam I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, there's a creek that runs through
Actually, I believe George would say a creek.
Our property and George's property, and it's the Redwood Creek, and it is just lined with wild blackberry bushes.
And you guys go out and pick them yourselves?
And, well, we used to, but now we make so much of it, we need to have some of the guys on the ranch help us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a sort of a combined effort. And we pick these wild blackberries, and as much care goes into picking those blackberries as it goes into picking grapes.
And it shows.
It really does.
You don't want to get them overripe, underripe. You want them right when they're at the peak of flavor. And then we pick them, and George and I, for days, we put them through a china cap so mm-hmm. that we get all the seeds out. And then we make jam.
And that's
and George's, all of the utensils that it's George's mother's recipe, all the utensils that she used when she made the jam. We weigh the fruit and the sugar on a scale that she weighed George on when he was a baby.
That's great. Now, this stuff is not for sale, right?
No.
It just goes out as Christmas presents?
That's right.
And if you stay at your ranch, you can get it on
and
your muffins in the morning?
Only to very special people.
I'm feeling
right now, there's 15 of Susan's customers listening going, hey, I never got any jam.
So every year when we get the Christmas present, it arrives. Mark gets a little box, and I get a little box from Henry, and we're like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
Mark walked over to my desk and grabbed it off my desk and said, we're saving that for the Henry.
Well, because last year we only used mine. Francis took his and ate it.
Yeah. It's delicious. We're talking with Susan Ridley. She's partners with George Henry at the Henry Ranch, a great winemaker out in California. And we'll be talking more with her in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55. This is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. One of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're here with Susan Ridley, who's partners with George Henry, one of the best winemakers out in California. You know, last time I was out at your ranch in California, Susan, we were sitting around having dinner, you, me, and George, and your husband and George's nephew, and we were, as the coffee came out, the conversation turned to the raging debate in the wine world about screw caps versus cork, and so many people are switching over to Stelvin closures or screw caps. And we had a lively discussion about that for about, I don't know, 3 hours. Where do we stand on the screw cap idea?
Well, we believe that it is a very good closure for wines that are going to be short-lived, like our white wines, particularly...
I think that's for sure.
...fermented white wines.
Right.
I think that's for sure. Any wine that's going to be drunk in 3 to 4 years, I think, is certainly...
But what about the Cabernets? What about the long aging?
Well, that's another thing. Apparently, they're working on some screw cap closures that will have permeability.
A little bit of breathing going through.
We'll be doing a little bit of breathing. Of course, the proof will be in the pudding. You know, when we really see if this does work. There have been a couple very reputable producers who have been putting their Cabernet in screw caps, and they. It seems to be accepted, and I think it's probably accepted more by the wine community than it is by the general public. Because
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a slow movement. This isn't going to happen all overnight.
There is that stigma of screw caps being used for inexpensive wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, just so everyone knows, that's as more and more corks are infected and may ruin a small percentage of wines, there are more and more winemakers who are looking to go over into some different kind of a closure.
Right.
Because cork is rare and expensive, and people have been using more and more of the plant, which causes more and more issues.
So there's an issue, and we'll see what Henry does with your wines overall. Hey, Susan, thanks for coming to talk with us today.
You're very welcome.
Susan, it's always great to talk to you.
Good to talk with you, and I'm sorry I'm going to miss that dinner. It looks wonderful.
Well, hopefully we'll come out this summer, and we'll see
you. Good.
And
thanks.
Take care. And if you out in the audience want to come to the George Henry dinner, it's next Tuesday. You can call 732-828-4444 or go to stageleft.com. We still have a couple of seats left. You can come and meet George Henry himself.
And if you're going out to California, we're going to put Brookside Ranch up on our website so that you can stay there.
You've got
to
stay at the Henry Ranch and visit George Henry's winery. It's incredible, incredible. Hope you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.